This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. There is a bit of sadness. I once again had to struggle to get my recorder to start recording. So either it is my little remote button thingy that I use to plug in the side of the recorder, although I suspect it is not that because I tried to manipulating the buttons on the recorder itself and was still not able to get it to go into record. The solution for now seems to be I take the battery pack out, I put the battery pack in, and I immediately start the recording. That still seems to work. So I have had this recorder for 13 plus years, I suppose. It may be time to invest in another one. We will see. Certainly the recorder was not cheap, but I have amortized my cost over many years, and it's been fine. So it'll all work out. It'll all work out. But it's a little sadness, a little sadness. Actually had a little sadness at work that we did get all worked out and Jesus helped us and that was fine. But we did a deployment today and it was just a minor deployment, thankfully. I completely missed the fact that I had two sets of stored procedures, five stored procedures in a set that I did not deploy to production. I still don't know how I missed them. I just missed them. And interestingly enough, I assumed that something would throw an error, and there were no errors in the deployment. It was only when we tried to bring up one of the forms that I had knew I had made an alteration on. When I tried to bring up one of those forms, lo and behold, it was not working. So I got that stuff deployed, and hopefully there's nothing else. I did go back and check very, very carefully everything else that was different, and there was nothing else that had to be deployed, and I didn't have anything in my notes of any other database changes that I had made, so I think we're fine. But that was a little bit of a surprise. And it took a couple hours for me to kind of get things squared away and get it taken care of, but Jesus is kind, and you know, it was fine, and we got it done. So all is well. It was just a little surprising, that's all. Spent the rest of the day, got some good things accomplished, this week, so all is well, puttering along. I did get the fairy costume finished up, as close as it's going to be finished, for National Fairy Day, which is a week from tomorrow, and started back in on my angel wings. They are going to be huge. I'm glad I did not get the 12-footers. So the 10-foot, I think, will be just fine. But actually working on those again and got actuators on them, tested both sides with the actuators, all that stuff is working. I'm working on the final sleeve now that goes over the top of the wings to make it look more like actual wings, although in this case, because it's going to be kind of a little steampunk derivative, I wouldn't necessarily have to have the covers on it. But, you know, I think it'll be better with the covers on it. So, and I'm certainly not going to fool anyone that they are real wings. When they move, they're very cool. It's very cool how they move and all that kind of good stuff. But they move like actuators are pushing them. They don't necessarily move like real wings. So there will be no question that they are mechanical wings and they'll fit perfectly with the whole steampunk thing. So that's good. I hope to have those wings finished up, well, roughed in by this weekend. And then I will still have some minor things like putting straps on them and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I will still have more to do there, but I have to get farther along with the rest of the costume before I have that finished. I am adding another costume this year, as it turns out. It was unexpected, but I was looking forward to see the costume days that were coming up, because often people say, oh, what's next week? And so I try to keep track of what's coming in the following week, so I can say, well, next week is this, and the week after that is this, and the week after that is that. And I came across Bagpipe Appreciation Day, I think it is. Bagpipe Appreciation Day. It is actually on the 27th of June, but the Friday that it's on, that I would be celebrating it, would be July 22nd. Yeah, July 22nd. So it's currently on the schedule for Bagpipe Day, celebrated on July 22nd, when in fact Bagpipe Appreciation Day is not until the 27th. And when I saw that on the list this last week, there was just little, It wasn't all of that, but that was the idea. It was basically just, eh. And I actually recognize that now. When it turns out like, eh, it means there's something else. And I certainly was not looking for another costume to do. But I recognize that, eh. So my first response was, okay, well, let's go see what there is to see. And so I hopped out on National Day's calendar and started looking specifically for the 22nd. Somehow I missed this. Somehow. I don't know how I missed this or if it was a late edition, but supposedly it's been celebrated for a while. Maybe it just finally made it on the National Day calendar. But July the 22nd, on a Friday, is National Rat Catchers Day. And it's for exterminators and stuff, but it's also for the Pied Piper. Because the Pied Piper of Hamelin, is that the poem, the Pied Piper of Hamelin? That poem recounts that those events happened on July 22nd. So July 22nd is Rat Catcher Day. And I thought, oh, well, that's fun. And so I started, because, you know, you've got the Pied Piper and they have a costume, and there's a lot of fun stuff in the costume. And I had seen different Pied Piper costumes, and so I knew kind of that it was going to be something like maybe a court jester or something like that. And I thought, well, I'll just kind of check it out and see what there is for these normal kind of costumes. And one of the costumes was more of a court jester type thing. But there were also costumes that he was dressed in a long robe, you know, a long kind of velvet looking robe, you know, with a stocking cap on top that would be like somebody would sleep with. And I thought, oh, well, okay, I can make something out of this. And so eventually I did, after a while, I did go and look up the poem to see what the description was of the Pied Piper. And I thought, well, this is pretty close. There is a word in here that has another meaning now, but you know what? We like the original meanings of words. And from the poem, it's, "And in did come the strangest figure. His queer long coat from heel to head was half of yellow and half of red. And he himself was tall and thin with sharp blue eyes," I actually had blue eyes, "each like a pin, and light loose hair, yet swarthy skin." I don't actually have swarthy skin, but you know, hey, it's close enough. "No tuft on cheek nor beard on chin, but lips were smiles went out and in. There was no guessing his kith and kin, and nobody could enough admire the tall man in his quaint attire." So I thought, I'll take that. That's pretty close. I can do that. The last part of it, I have no idea what this means. "Quoth one," double quote, "it's as if my great grandshire starting up at the trump of Dune's tone had walked this way from his painted tombstone," end quote. So it's apparently the Pied Piper looks like somebody who just got out of the grave. I'm not doing that part. But anyway, so it's fun. It was fun. It got even more fun because I was like, well, probably need some kind of a velvet robe. Maybe, maybe with like some embroidery on it. So I searched on eBay. Well, I first searched just on Amazon. Couldn't find anything. And then I thought, oh, I should search eBay. So I went ahead and searched on eBay. Lo and behold, there was one robe on eBay, made in India, gold velvet. Well, dark red velvet with gold embroidery, the whole bit. And it's actually come in today and is supposedly in my mailbox. So we're going to see. And it was my size. There was one. So I thought, well, okay. So I went ahead and bought it. And I'm actually going to see, I got to try it on and actually see if it fits, but they had the measurements on there and here it is. Now I just have to see if I can, I'm going to have to back up. I got too close to the mailbox and it was in the lower portion of the mailbox. One moment. So I got to try it on, see if it actually fits, which according to the measurements, it looked like it did. And if it fits, then I've already got other pieces I'm working on putting together for it. And we'll just see if that works out. So anyways, fun stuff. But all the little pieces just immediately came together for it. So it was one of those costumes that I knew I was just going to have to buy the pieces. I am going to have to make myself a stocking cap. You know, one of those long stocking caps that you sleep in. Kind of Victorian type stocking cap, but that's easy. I've ordered some gold velvet material. I can make a stocking cap up, probably put a wire in it so that I can kind of curly cue it and turn it into the shapes that I want to turn it into. But so that's, we're doing National Rat Catcher Days. So that's fun. The writing is going fine. I'm in the process of doing the read through. I'm just a tad behind on that a little bit because I didn't do any reading last night, which I should have, but I'm going to try to get caught up tonight on the read through for book 16. Got to get the production version of that finished this month. But that, it should be fine. And then I immediately push back into book 17 as soon as I get that off my plate. And then we start writing the second half of book 17. But I think I know where I'm going with book 17. You know, we haven't had a character die in a long time, and or at least a main character. And unfortunately, I think it's time. So that's a little sad when I realize that, oh, yeah, that's probably going to happen in this book. You know, it's like, oh, well, sadness. But I mean, we're on the countdown now. So because including book 17, there's only 8 more books to go. And So there you go. Won't say too much more about that. I did come across an article by John McWhorter, who's a linguist who does a podcast, recently just wrote a book, just released a book called John McWhorter's new book. Woke, yeah, Woke Racism was his newest book, and very interesting. I've heard him talk about it, very interesting. And but he's a linguist. That's what he does for a living. He teaches at a major, major university. And he just had some, he wrote an article called English is Not Normal, and I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. But there was just some interesting stuff in here, so things that I just had never heard before. So this is just one of those informational things. He says, English speakers know that their language is odd. So do people saddled with learning it non-natively. The oddity that we all perceive most readily is its spelling, which is indeed a nightmare. And that's true. We spell things all different kinds of things. This is interesting. In countries where English isn't spoken, there is no such thing as a spelling bee competition. Because things are just spelled as they sound. For a normal language, spelling at least pretends the basic correspondence to the way people pronounce the words, but English is not normal. So he talks about how that we have some odd things. So he talks about how the Indo-European languages will all Indo-European languages have gendered nouns and verbs. That there are male and female nouns and verbs. And that is the original, from what I understand, the original definition of gender. That it is something that assigns masculine or feminine to objects and actions. He says that English is the only Indo-European language that does not assign genders. He said also, there is exactly one language on earth whose present tense requires a special ending only in the third person singular. So you say, I talk, so that's present, you talk, he, she talks. So we put an S on the end of it. And why just that? Why is it only the present tense in the third person that gets it? He said present tense verbs of a normal language have either no endings or a bunch of different endings. Spanish, hablo, hablas, habla. And try naming another language where you have to slip do into sentences to negate or question something. Do you find that difficult? Unless you happen to be from Wales, Ireland, or north of France, probably. Why is our language so eccentric? Just what is this thing we are speaking and what happened to make it this way? So he says that English basically started out as a kind of German. And because of that, Old English is so unlike the modern version that it feels like a stretch to think of them as the same language at all. And he's got a list here that I can't even read this. Hoyt, we, Gardena, in Gear de Gum. I don't know. It's just, I think it's from Beowulf because it means, so we Spear Danes have heard of the king's, tribe king's glory in days of yore. Icelanders can still read similar stories written in Old Norse, the Old Norse ancestor of their language 1,000 years ago. Yet to the untrained eye, Beowulf might as well be in Turkish. So he says the first thing that got us there, when the Anglo-Saxon and Jutes brought their language to England, the island was already inhabited by people who spoke very different tongues. Their languages were Celtic ones, today represented by the Welsh, Irish, and Breton across the Channel in French. The Celts were subjugated but survived. And since there were only about 250,000 Germanic invaders, roughly the population of a modest burg like Jersey City, very quickly most of the people speaking Old English were Celts. Crucially, their languages were quite unlike English. For one thing, the verb came first. So they would say, came first the verb. But they also had an odd construction with the verb do. They used it to form a question, to make a sentence negative, and even just as a kind of reasoning before any verb. For instance, do you walk? I do not walk. I do walk. All those things use the word do in those ways, as either to form a sentence, form a question, make a sentence negative, or to make... or even as just kind of a seasoning before any verb to make it more, I do walk. So that looks familiar now because the Celts started doing it in their rendition of English. But before that, such sentences would have seemed bizarre to an English speaker, as they would today in just about any language other than our own and the surviving Celtic ones. Notice how even to dwell upon this usage of do is to realize something in itself, like being made aware that there is always a tongue in your mouth. So anyways, he says that thus English is weirdness. He said, at this date, there is no documented language on earth beyond Celtic and English that uses do in just that way. Thus, English's weirdness began with its transformation in the mouths of people more at home with speaking vastly different tongues. We are still talking about them in ways that we would never think. When saying, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, have you ever felt like you were counting? Well, you are. In Celtic numbers, chewed up over time, but recognizably descended from the ones rural Britishers used when counting animals and playing games. Hickory, dickory, dock. What in the world do those words mean? Well, here's a clue. Hovera, dovera, dock were 8, 9, and 10 in that same Celtic counting list. The second thing that happened was the yet more Germanic speakers came across the sea meaning business. This wave began in the 9th century, and this time the invaders were speaking another Germanic offshoot, Old Norse. But they didn't impose their language. Instead, they married locals and switched to English. And they did what we would expect them to do. They were Scandinavian. They spoke bad old English. Their kids heard as much of that as they did real old English. Life went on, and pretty soon their bad old English was the real English, and here we are today. The Scandies made English easier. So this is a lot of, you know, really interesting stuff. So he goes on and talks about, you know, he talks about other things. He said, Old English had crazy genders that we would expect of a good European language, but the Scandies didn't bother with those, so now we have none. Chalk up one of English's weirdness. What's more, the Vikings mastered only that one shred of once lovely conjugation system, hence the lonely third-person singular S hanging on like a dead bug on a windshield. Here, in other ways, they smoothed out the hard stuff. So you had these people who migrated in, tried to learn Old English. There was hard things in it. They just kind of did away with some of those things. They also followed the lead of the Celts, rending language in whatever seemed most natural to them. It is amply documented that they left English with thousands of new words, including ones that seem very intimately us. Sing the old song, Get Happy, and the words in that title are from Norse. So, yeah, and he goes in all the parallels of the different words. It's very interesting. You should look up the article and read it. It's very, very interesting. So, the article goes on for pages and pages and pages. It talks about the fire hose. English got hit by a fire hose spray of words from yet more. After the Norse came the French, the Normans descended from the Vikings, as it happened, conquered England, ruled for several years. Before long, English had picked up 10,000 new words. Then starting in the 16th century, educated Anglophiles developed a sense of English as a vehicle of sophisticated writing, so it became fashionable to cherry-pick words from Latin, etc., etc., etc. So it's very interesting how this is, you know, and he said it's easy to say that comprehend in French gave us a new formal way to say understand. But then in Old English itself, there were words that when rendered in modern English would look something like forestand, underget, and undergrasp. They all appear to mean understand, but surely had different connotations. So lots and lots and lots and lots of interesting stuff here. He says, to be fair, we'll skip over that part because the car is warm. So, and finally, because of this fire spray hose, we English speakers also have to contend with two different ways of accenting words. Clip on a suffix to the word wonder and you get wonderful. But clip on an ending to the word modern and the ending pulls the accent ahead of it. Modern, modernity, not modernity. That doesn't happen with wonder and wonderful or cheery and cheerily, but it does happen with personal and personality. What's the difference? It's that full and li are Germanic endings, while itty came in with French. French and Latin endings pull the accent closer. Tempest, tempestuous. While Germanic ones leave the accent alone. One never notices such a thing, but it's one way this simple language is not actually so. He says, thus, and I'm skipping forward to the end, thus English indeed is indeed an odd language, and its spelling is only the beginning. In the widely read Globish, 2010, McCrum celebrates English as uniquely vigorous, too sturdy to be obliterated by the Norman conquest. He also treats English as laudably flexible and adaptable, impressed by its mongrel vocabulary. McCrum is merely following a long tradition of sunny, muscular boasts, which resemble the Russians' idea that their language is great and mighty, as the 19th century novelist Ivan Turgenev called it, or the French idea that their language is uniquely clear. However, we might be reluctant to identify just which languages are not mighty, especially since obscure languages spoken by small numbers of people are typically majestically complex. The common idea that English dominates the world because it is flexible implies that there have been languages that failed to catch on beyond their tribe because they were mysteriously rigid. I am not aware of any such languages, he says. What English does have on other tongues is that because it is deeply peculiar in the structural sense, and it became peculiar because of the slings and arrows as well as the caprices of outrageous history. So there you go, a little history on the English language. I was reading through that and I thought, that is very interesting. Who knew that eeny, meeny, miny, mo was actually counting, or hickory, dickory, dock was actually counting? Fun stuff. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.